This is Radio Superior 1940, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes, station KUWS. It's Monday, August 26th, 1940. This is Ray Paulson speaking. Lou Martin is standing by with the 6 o'clock news, including the world roundup from the European War. We're going to have some fun today, folks. The reason I am here, and Jack isn't, is because he's at the Bayfield County Fair with all of this weekend's Blue Ribbon winners.
You know, some guys get all the good assignments. Community editor Harriet Farrig is with them, and they'll be broadcasting from Iron River throughout today's program.
Oh, boy, the competition was stiff.
And sometimes acrimonious.
Well, whenever you pit Ulu against Aino or Port Wing versus Herbster, well, you never can tell what's going to happen. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Branzers. Quality back-to-school clothes, including fall tweed suits, for just $22.50. Branzers on Tower Avenue in Superior. And now, Lou Martin with the news.
Good evening. 500 German planes bombed England today in the largest attack on the British Isles since the Blitz began. But we're getting startling news in today, for some of these bombers are targeting London for the first time. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Report with Webb Miller in London.
London calling. This is Webb Miller reporting. Air raid sirens are sounding in London and its suburbs as a flight of German planes flew past Dover, apparently headed for this city. Now, we don't have any further information on this. It could signal a shift in the bombing missions of the German Air Force. So now, Nazi planes have targeted airfields and industrial centers, military bases, and weapons plants. This past night's bombing raids were the most intense of the battle for Britain. Raids on one Midland city where important factories are located, in Birmingham, were the worst of the war in terms of damage and casualties. The Ministry of Home Security reports that municipal and industrial property was damaged in the Midlands. Many people were hurt and some were killed. The fires were extinguished or controlled by morning. The ministry confirmed that there were two raids on London and other raids on coastal defenses. It was also disclosed that on Saturday night, 2 nights ago, a bomb hit the famous Church of St. Giles in the Cripple Gate district adjoining the Liverpool Railroad Station. The statue of Milton outside the church was also damaged. In London, this is Webb Miller calling Berlin. Come in, Max Jordan.
This is the Third Reich, Max Jordan reporting. Berliners got their first taste of an air raid today when four waves of British bombers skirted spectacular German anti-aircraft fire. I watched as they swooped above a protective ceiling of clouds. Then the raiders dropped incendiary bombs on the outskirts of this city. Berlin's population of 4 million people huddled in cellars and shelters for 3 hours and 4 minutes, but the high command reports little damage was caused by the attack. This was Berlin's fifth air raid alarm of the war, but this is the first time bombers flew over the capital itself. They were aiming for a military complex in the northern suburb of Rosenthal. Meanwhile, the Nazi command says the Luftwaffe dropped 1,500 bombs on 38 British objectives in sweeping raids last night and today. Targets include Birmingham, Coventry, Kingstown, where armament factories are operating. The Germans claim 72 RAF planes shot down, while 14 German planes failed to return. In Berlin, this is Max Jordan. We return you now to London for an eyewitness report on the bombing of London. Come in, Edward R. Murrow.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London. At the moment, everything is quiet. For reasons of national as well as personal security, I am unable to tell you the exact location from which I'm speaking. Off to my left, far away in the distance, I can see just that faint, red, angry snap of anti-aircraft bursts against the steel blue sky. but the guns are so far away that it's impossible to hear them from this location. About 5 minutes ago, the guns in the immediate vicinity were working. I can look across just at a building not far away and see something that looks like a splash of white paint down the side. And I know from daylight observation that about a quarter of that building has disappeared, hit by a bomb the other night. Streets fan out in all directions from here, and down on one street I can see a single red light, and just faintly the outline of a sign standing in the middle of the street. And again, I know what that sign says, because I saw it this afternoon. It says, "Danger, unexploded bomb." Off to my left still, I can see just that red snap of the anti-aircraft fire. I was up here earlier this afternoon and looking out over these housetops, looking all the way to the dome of St. Paul's. I saw many flags flying from staffs. No one ordered these people to put out the flags. They simply feel like flying the Union Jack above their roofs. No one told them to do it, and no flag up there was white. I can see one or two of them just stirring very faintly in the breeze now. You may be able to hear the sound of guns off in the distance, very faintly, like someone kicking a tub. Now they're silent. Four searchlights reach up, disappear in the light of a three-quarter moon. I should say at the moment there are probably three aircraft in the general vicinity of London, because one can tell by the movement of the lights and the flash of the anti-aircraft guns. But at the moment, in the central area, everything is quiet. More searchlights spring up over on my right. I think probably in a minute we shall have the sound of guns in the immediate vicinity. The lights are swinging over in this general direction now. You'll hear two explosions. Just there they are. Again, moving in, still a considerable distance away. Moving still just a little closer. There you heard two. The searchlights are stretching out now in this general direction. I can hear just a faint whisper of an aircraft high overhead. Again, those guns are a considerable distance away. You'll hear them just vaguely in the background. Straight in front of me now, you'll hear two sounds in just a moment. There they are. That was the explosion overhead, not the guns themselves. I should think in a few minutes there may be a bit of shrapnel around here. Coming in, moving a little closer all the while. The plane is still very high, and it's quite clear that he's not coming in for his bombing run. Earlier this evening, we could hear occasionally, again, those were explosions overhead. Earlier this evening, we heard a number of bombs go sliding and slithering across to fall several blocks away. Just overhead now, the burst of the anti-aircraft fire. Still, the nearby guns are not working. And the searchlights now are feeling almost directly overhead. Now you'll hear two bursts a little nearer in a moment. There they are. That hard, stony sound.
This is Alfred M. Schock in Washington. Bermuda has announced that it is ready to place an air base at the disposal of the United States government. This is the first of what may be several air and naval base locations for the United States off its coastal waters in British possessions. Since the fall of France, FDR is concerned that Germany may land military forces in French territories. If Britain falls, Germany could use Trinidad, the Barbados, and the Bahamas to invade the United States. Commenting on the Bermuda announcement, Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky says the offer would be for a 99-year lease. In exchange, it is possible the U.S. would cancel Britain's war debt and transfer 50 overage destroyers to the Royal Navy. Not everyone likes this proposal. Isolationist leader Republican Senator Gerald Nye of North Dakota says such a deal would be an act of war against Germany and Italy. Florida Senator Claude Pepper defended the proposal, saying America needs a string of bases to protect its coasts and the Panama Canal. In Washington, this is Alfred M. Schock reporting.
Here's a few words now from Winston Churchill.
The gratitude of every home in our island, in our empire, and indeed throughout the world, except in the abodes of the guilty, goes out to the British airmen, who, undaunted by odds, unwearied in their constant challenge and mortal danger, are turning the tide of the world war by their prowess and by their devotion. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. All our hearts go out to the fighter pilots, whose brilliant actions we see with our own eyes day after day. But we must never forget that all the time, night after night, month after month, our bomber squadrons travel far into Germany, find their targets in the darkness by the highest navigational skill, aim their attacks, often under the heaviest fire, often with serious loss, with deliberate careful discrimination, and inflict shattering blows upon the whole of the technical and war-making structure of the Nazi power.
That was Winston Churchill. The peacetime draft should pass Congress, and it should pass it immediately. That from Republican presidential candidate Wendell Willkie. Mr. Willkie says he's disturbed that conscription has not been passed, even though it was proposed 100 days ago. He agrees with the Roosevelt administration that a peacetime draft is indispensable now for the defense of the nation. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:07. Ray Paulson has these words from our sponsor.
And we have good words from Branzer's Clothing in Superior. You know, there's bargains galore and just on time because it's back to school time. So all the boys, large and small, are going to have a chance to save some real money at Branzer's on Tower Avenue. All summer merchandise, many items of past winter stock, prices cut far below replacement costs. No lay-bys, no approvals. But come early for the best values. Here's an idea. Long corduroy pants for boys, formerly $325 to $355, one-half price. Same thing for long wool pants, formerly $229 to $425. And one lot of boys' sweaters, formerly $1 to $295, are one-third off. Oh, there's stuff for the men, too. There's a big clearance in the men's department at Branzer's. All men's summer wash pants, formerly $1.19 to $3.95. You guessed it, half price. Hey, now's the time. Get to Branzer's on Tower Avenue, downtown Superior. You know, those reports from Berlin and London were chilling, Lou. You could hear the bombs hitting, the anti-aircraft fire in Murrow's report. Frightening.
Well, that's because only Edward R. Murrow takes his microphones outside the broadcasting building. Sometimes he does his talk from a sidewalk, other times from a rooftop. He brings it right into our living room. In news from home, a spectacular plan to lure farmers from the Depression's Dust Bowl to Douglas County hit opposition from the county board today. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
This plan put forth by Elmer Johnson Land Company would pay the county $125,000 on property that otherwise sits idle, taken for back taxes. Then parcels of the property would be sold to farmers from Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, and other states. Mr. Johnson says this colonization plan would be great for the county and great for hardworking farmers who lost their land to drought and bankruptcy. This includes property in the township of Summit, Poplar, Superior, Lakeside, Maple, Brule, Hawthorne, Cloverland, Oakland, Amnicon, and Parkland. Poplar Town Board Chairman Norman LaPole likes the idea of revitalizing Douglas County with an influx of farmers, but he says all 50,000 acres of tax-forfeited property shouldn't be tied up with one company. The only board member to vote in favor of it was Cloverland Town Chairman Edwin Pearson. Lou?
It would have been interesting to see how the plan would have turned out for the future of Douglas County. Mandatory alien registration will begin across the country Tuesday morning. Material necessary will be at the Superior Post Office. Postmaster Bethel Robinson says post office clerks will be in charge of registering and fingerprinting non-citizens. People have until December the 26th to register. The penalty for not registering is a $1,000 fine or 6 months in prison. This comes after congressional action in June to protect the country against aliens who would undermine the government. Since Canada is at war, strict identification is needed to cross the border from the United States. So Superior Deputy City Clerk Henry Skudstead says that they're swamped with requests for copies of birth certificates. Mr. Skudstead says proof of American citizenship helps people cut through the red tape when visiting Canada. Grading work on Highway 2 between Iron River and Ino should be finished in 2 weeks. That'll get it ready for paving next year. When it's finished, motorists will have paved highway all the way from Superior to Ashland to Hurley to Ironwood, Michigan. The paving is done as part of a WPA project. The Mellon Blue Hat Club is planning a celebration for the finishing of Highway 13 concrete paving. That means there will be a ribbon of cement between Ashland and Mellon. People without electricity service in rural Bayfield County should attend a meeting tomorrow night at the Iron River Town Hall. George Hallinan of Superior is organizing the effort for the head of the Lakes Cooperative Electrical Association. And finally, Ray, a national radio audience heard all about the Superior Ordox this week. Radio reporter Linton Wells, broadcasting for 5 minutes on the Ford Radio Sunday evening hour, tagged along on an ore ship. He went from Detroit's River Rouge plant up to Lake Superior on the freighter, the Benson Ford. Mr. Wells says Superior's docks, the largest in the world, loaded 12,000 tons of iron ore in less than a day with tremendous efficiency.
Holy leg boats. It took them 5 minutes to talk about that? Oh, boy. Lou Martin with the 6 o'clock news. We'll be hearing from Jack McKenna and Harriet Farrig on a special long-distance telephone hookup from the Bayfield County Fair in Iron River.
Is this thing on?
I told you it's on. If I tell you it works, it works. Engineers don't lie about those things, sis.
Which probably means everyone is hearing the both of you right now.
So be quiet unless you want to be heard over the air for crying out loud.
Well, at least we know they're alive and well. We'll get to them right after we hear our first musical selection for this, August the 26th, 1940. This is Glenn Miller and his orchestra with the singing of Ray Eberle. Let's enjoy Sierra Sue on the Martin and McKenna Show. Your enjoyment from the 1940 Hit Parade. That's Glenn Miller and his orchestra with Sierra Sue on station KUWS. Let's go now via long-distance telephone hookup to Iron River at the end of the Bayfield County Fair. Hello, Jack. Uh-oh. Can you hear me, Jack? Hello? Anybody? Oh, well. I'll do some sports because that's what I do. Sports fans, a big, hard-fought four-game series ended this weekend between the first-place Grand Forks Chiefs and the third-place Superior Blues. The Blues matched the Chiefs score for score, play for play, and split the series two games apiece, including yesterday's doubleheader split. Blues southpaw Metro Persoski one-hit the Chiefs in the first game for the win. The defending National Professional Football League champs, Green Bay Packers, are in training for the coming season. And guess who is trying for a comeback? None other than the colorful vagabond halfback, Johnny Blood. Sport fans around here know about Johnny Blood. He got his pro start with the Duluth Eskimos in 1923, one of the charter clubs of the National League. He didn't play last year, but wants to play this year. Packers coach Curly Lambeau says he'll see what Johnny Blood can do in a practice game against the Chicago Cardinals. Blood's escapades are legion, like the time he showed up late for a game in Chicago, and he was fined $100. He went on to knock down 8 Bears passes and caught 2 for the win. The fine was canceled. Or the time he was late for a Thanksgiving game in Philadelphia, Johnny was buying poorly clad youngsters turkey dinners. Well, we wish Johnny the best of luck, which we may need to get Jack and Harriet on the line from Iron River. Well, let's listen to this fine selection by Artie Shaw, featuring the fine vocals of Billie Holiday and Any Old Time on Station KUWS.
Mm-hmm.
What a sound. What a sound. That's Billie Holiday with Artie Shaw and his orchestra and Any Old Time on Station KWWS. All right. Let's try it again, folks. Maybe three times will be a charm.
Hello, Jack.
Testing. One, two, three, testing. This is engineer in charge, Joe Gordonio at the Bayfield County Fair in Iron River. Testing!
I thought you said you had this thing working.
The Concern Phone Company is what the problem is. Dagnabbit! Bunch of horse feathers is what it is.
Hey, guys, you're on the air. Von, watch the language now.
Ha! I told you I'd got it working. So, Ray, how long have we been on the air? Before or after horse feathers?
I think you were on just before.
I've got it, Joe. Welcome from beautiful Iron River and the Bayfield County Fair. This is Jack McKenna with Harriet Feirig on one of our best summer assignments.
Have you had your fill of corn dogs and blueberry pies?
Pies, plural. Oh, I've had two of them. I'm bringing home some more, too.
For your favorite sports guy, right, I hope?
And favorite newsman.
We have so many wonderful exhibits here, and blue ribbons went out to so many categories. There are some outstanding community exhibits to see here in Iron River. First place for community exhibits went to Ulu. Hughes won second place, and the town of Tripp third. And you just have to see the school exhibits. Bayfield County School Superintendent Danielle Brace and his assistant, Miss Zelda Johnson, coordinated it all. The best display from any one-room schoolhouse was from the Hopkins School in Keystone, with Walter Simpson as teacher. The Highland Rural School of Eileen, with teacher Miss Muriel Anderson, won second place. And the Long Lake Rural School from the town of Washburn won third. The home folks here applauded when the blue ribbon was given to the Iron River Junior High School display. Alice Marie Johnson is the teacher there.
Tell them about the Jednota Rural School of Keystone.
Yeah, Harriet, tell them about the robot. Huh? Tell them.
Okay, boys. The Jednota School, led by teacher Robert Wangan, built a very, well, unique display made of milk cans.
Milk can legs, milk can arms, milk can body, and a milk pail for a head.
It doesn't figure that it didn't do better than fourth place.
Yes, it was very educational. The Ondosigan Union Free High School near Barksdale won first place with an informative poster display. Inspired by teachers Vernon Horn and Marie Huber, it included pictures of workers at the DuPont TNT factory, fishermen hauling in a day's catch from Lake Superior, farmers tending to their fields, and loggers clearing trees for the sawmills.
Yeah, that was okay.
But it wasn't as good as the toothpick cow.
Yes, that was very educational. The Pease School of Barnes and teacher Helen Miller won fifth place with that.
Yeah, fifth place. A life-size cow made out of toothpicks, only fifth place.
Clearly the judges were biased.
Yeah, the Pease School was robbed, plain and simple.
We'll be back with the women's department ribbons, and then, I can't wait for this, folks, we get to guess the weight of Petunia the pig.
Petunia? They have a pig named Petunia?
Well, whoever guesses the closest wins the bacon.
Ooh, I have to say, I wish I was there, Jack and Harriet.
And Joe Gardonio, chief engineer in charge,
are in Iron River at the Bayfield County Fair. Say, let's listen to another number from the 1940 hit parade. This is Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra with Green Eyes. Here's Looking At You on Station KUWS.
Your green eyes with their soft light, your eyes that promise sweet nights, bring to my soul a longing, a thirst for love divine. In dreams I seem to hold you, to find you and enfold you, our lips meet and our hearts too, with a thrill so sublime. Those cool and limpid green eyes, a pool wherein my love lies, so deep that in my searching for happiness I fear that they will ever hold me. All through my life they'll taunt me, but will they ever want me? Green eyes, make my dream come true.
That's a big hit for Jimmy Dorsey from the 1940 Hit Parade. Green Eyes, and that was button-nosed Helen O'Connell, the lovely lady doing the singing. Right here on the Martin and McKenna Show. I'm Ray Paulson with Lou Martin here at the studio. Jack McKenna is with Harriet Varig in Iron River on the last day of the 1940 Bayfield County Fair. Hello again, Jack.
You're a disgrace. Look at you. Your hands are blue, you've got a blue mustache, you've got blueberry stains on your shorts.
But there's blueberry muffins, blueberry cookies, blueberry pancakes, blueberry cake, and blueberry ice cream.
And a blueberry microphone. Everything you touch is sticky.
Sorry, Joe. Put her there.
Well, I guess I can't blame you. Let's shake. Yo! Now my hand's all sticky and blue for crying out loud.
Well, you were right, Lou. You were right.
It happens every time you go to the county fair. Some places it's watermelon, other places it's carameled apples, funnel cakes, or elephant ears. Jack is just enthusiastic about goodies.
Earth to Jack and Harriet. Come in, Jack and Harriet.
Hello, Raymond. Jack's washing up now. I'm not sure if he's going to get his hands clean.
That's the kind of stain that has to wear off your skin.
Hello, Lewis. I wish you were here. It isn't the same without you.
Well, shucks.
Well, the big guy is freshening up. I'll pinch hit. And just in the nick of time, too. They're about to announce the winner of the livestock contest to guess how much Petunia the pig weighs.
Mr. John Chapel of Ashland owns Petunia, but Mr. John Hauser of Bayfield is one of the judges of Best Pig. Good evening, sir.
Yes, sir. We got some good hogs on hand here. A nice-looking bunch of porkers.
Hey, you want to hear my hog call? Now, I heard Bazooka Bob Burns do it in a movie once, and...
You don't want to toy with a pig, son. You had one squealing, and before you know it, they're stampeding the pig pen. And then we've got real trouble.
I'll bet it's as hard as trying to catch a greased pig, huh?
Hey, very good imitation there, friend. Besides Petunia here, other Blue Ribbon Oinkers are those two owned by John Riedel. He's with 4-H, you know. He calls those two bacon and the other one sausage.
So, as a judge, Mr. Hauser, what makes a pig the best in the polk?
Goodness!
I like to say it's not skin deep. You look at the pig's structure. It's muscle. And lastly, and this is real important, the way it walks.
You mean waddles?
And, yeah, and the way it snorts.
Better be careful, Joe. You might win a ribbon. Up next, we'll go back to Iron River for the winner of the weigh-in. On with the music. Here's Benny Goodman with vocals by his band and Flatfoot Floogie with the Floyd Floyd on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Flatfoot Floogie with the Floyd Floyd.
Big hit from 1938. That's Benny Goodman and his orchestra with Flatfoot Floogie on station KUWS. It makes your hips move. It makes everything move. Flatfoot Jack, hello.
Okay, Ray. I'm with Swine Judge John Hauser of Bayfield.
And we prefer hog aficionado. The guesses are all in except for the three of you. Want to take a crack at Petunia's weight, eh?
Usually, it's impolite to speak of a girl's weight, but I'll guess 140 pounds.
Petunia will be flattered. And you, Mr. Engineer?
Well, I've examined her circumference, hoof imprint, and her beady eyes carefully.
Petunia's got pretty eyes. Well, unless you spook her. It isn't good to spook a piggy.
249, that's it. She weighs 249 pounds.
Whoa. So I'll say 248. Mr. Complain about sticky things when I'm trying to have a nice time at the fair.
Jack. Joe, really?
Petunia's exact weight, witnessed by Mr. David Holt of the State Agricultural Station at Ashland Junction, is 249 pounds. That's remarkable, Mr. Gardono.
Ha! Engineer's wit again. It's using the old noggin, you know.
I just missed by 1 pound. If only Petunia hadn't eaten that last bag of apples I gave her.
Well, this calls for the Bazooka Bob Burns hog call.
Better not. They'll stampede.
Head for the wiener stand. They don't like it there.
Gotta go, guys. I got some pies to save from stampeding hoops.
Oh, Petunia's looking right at me. I think she's mad. Oh.
Unfortunately, that's not the first time we've ended a live broadcast from somewhere with static.
It does seem to happen a lot with us, doesn't it?
This will be the fifth county fair that we won't be invited back to.
Oh, well, as Jack always says, we'll be back. Same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and pigs don't fly. For Lou Martin, Harriet Varg, and Jack McKenna, this is Ray Paulson wishing you a very good evening.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1940, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farag is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skorich, John Munsell, Don Hansen. All events reported on Radio Superior 1940 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this same time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Dan Culhane, speaking. Good night.